Part 3. Worlds Apart. Victory belongs to the most persevering. Napoleon Bonaparte. G-74. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. They must have seen it by now, Emma sighed, growing impatiently frustrated with the lack of word from Buenos Aires. More than enough time had passed for at least one of Dan or Tara to have been able to momentarily sneak away to a secluded spot from where they could reply to Clark's message about Piper, even if they couldn't quite find enough time and space to make a call. The fact that they hadn't replied brought a strong element of concern, since Emma knew they would reply if they could. So why can't they? She wondered uneasily.
We don't know what the hell is going on at the ICA right now, Clark said, reaching for the hidden projector's remote control and pointing it upwards to open the recess in the ceiling from which the device quickly lowered. Remember back when Godfrey was launching the GCC and they activated signal blockers to control news about the triangle they found in Zanzibar? Maybe something like that has happened. There doesn't even need to have been a discovery. It could just be that they've put blockers in place to control what information gets in and out before Godfrey's speech. You know, like a preemptive thing to make sure nothing embarrassing happens between now and then. The speech is soon enough for that to be possible, don't you think?
With a few more rapid clicks, Clark then called the screen down in the same manner and navigated to ACN. You might actually be right, Emma said, picking Piper up from her high chair and carrying her over to the couch. Clark glanced back at her from his standing position near the screen.
No need to sound quite so surprised there, he replied, grinning slightly in a momentary respite from the oppressively challenging situation he and Emma found themselves in, of trying to stay calm in the face of what they hoped was a false alarm that Piper had somehow retained some form of uplift power. As expected, the presenters in the ACN news studio were talking about nothing other than the ICA's grand opening gala in Buenos Aires. A reporter on the street was chatting back and forth with the anchors, and there was no mention of any issues with cellular or internet signals. This put paid to that idea, and the absence of any other particular dramas in the fairly tame discussions once again sent Clark and Emma back to square one, wondering why neither Dan nor Tara had replied to Clark's text if nothing major had happened. The fact that neither the building nor its immediate surroundings were experiencing any signal issues meant that their phones had definitely received the message, and there was no reason to think they hadn't also read it. Clark's somewhat quaint desire for a degree of digital privacy was actually a hindrance in this regard, for since he had set his own phone to disable message-read notifications so that others wouldn't know when he had read their messages, he was, reciprocally, unable to discern when a recipient of a message from him had read it. This had slipped Emma's mind when she permitted him to send the message rather than having done so herself, and in the emotionally charged concern of the moment, she hadn't even thought to inquire about the delivered or read status of the message. Back on the screen, the anchors in the ACN studio segued to footage of an event that would have been on Emma's radar had she been paying attention to anything other than Piper in the past hour or so. A supposedly impromptu public appearance by John Cole outside the Gravesen Hotel in Buenos Aires. She focused intently on the minute or so of footage that the network played, and was entirely unsurprised that Cole had subtly but unmistakably cast doubt on the likely effectiveness of the ICA's leadership and Chairman Godfrey in particular. Everyone with their ear to the ground in London, Washington, or Buenos Aires knew very well that Cole was furious with Godfrey over a recent series of perceived snubs, and Emma's recent work in attempting to ensure favorable media coverage of the ICA had sent her deeper down the rabbit hole of Cole's discontented schemes than just about anyone else. Her extensive list of contacts, built over many years in the shark-infested waters of New York City's PR scene, and larger than ever now that she was such a prominent figure and central part of the undisputed first family of contact, included many individuals who openly and often gladly reported that Cole, a man roundly despised by most, had sounded them out for dirt on everyone involved at the ICA. This everyone included Emma herself, she was told by several different individuals,
as well as the more natural targets of Dan and Tara, who were both titled members of the ICA's executive committee. Unsurprisingly, however, the chief targets of Cole's shenanigans were Valerie Slater and William Godfrey. What did surprise Emma was the word she received from one particularly well-positioned English source, that Cole's subterfuge and espionage-like plotting had recently switched its primary focus from Slater to Godfrey. According to those who would know and would never lie to her, Cole had raised his sights from seeking a spot at the ICA's top table to seeking the spot at its head. In short, he was no longer gunning for Slater. He was gunning for Godfrey. Emma knew that Godfrey's sources, especially in England, were certain to be at least as good as her own. This ensured that he would be fully aware of the threat posed by his former protege, which was in itself an indication of Cole's lack of finesse. When the likes of Godfrey was planning something, the target didn't know. Cole, on the other hand, lacked sufficient care in vetting his advisors and confidants. It was important for Emma to keep track of this kind of Machiavellian nonsense for several reasons, one of which was naturally that Cole's schemes had direct implications for herself as well as multiple other members of her own immediate family. Perhaps even more importantly, however, John Cole had proven himself to be a threat to international security to an extent few others could have achieved, even if they tried. The rotund and brash Prime Minister had a penchant for media spectacles, as evidenced by the scene currently playing on the projector screen as he stood before a veritable ocean of surprisingly supportive demonstrators, but he utterly lacked a filter. While someone like Godfrey was also a skilled attention seeker, he at least operated within certain boundaries and recognized that some things were beyond the pale. For Cole, on the other hand, everything seemed to be a game, and one he played as though he had infinite lives, as was best illustrated by his selfish and reckless decision to publicly reveal that an extinction-level comet was heading straight for Earth at a time when the few others in the loop were working around the clock on potential solutions. The idea of withholding the bad news until some form of potential solution could be announced at the same time was so obviously desirable to everyone else that Cole's move caught them all by surprise, ushering in, as it did, precisely the kind of hopelessness-induced rioting they had been desperately trying to avoid. Emma would never forget that people had died because of John Cole's irresponsible politics, and the fact that he had ultimately seen a degree of sense in turning against Jack Neal when an alien squadron appeared over Havana meant very little to her. She knew that Cole had that day acted out of rational self-preservation rather than any altruistic or elective desire to do the right thing, whether everyone else recognized this or not. Some, particularly Godfrey, seemed to have softened somewhat on Cole largely because he had shown himself to be slightly less selfish and risible than the aforementioned Jack Neal. But no one in the world was worse than Jack, as Emma knew better than anyone, so this struck her as being akin to preferring a kick in the gut to a punch in the face. There was no room in her life for either, and she wished Godfrey had thought similarly. The sight of Cole manipulating the media in Buenos Aires on a day when so much was going on just a few miles from his hotel made Emma decidedly uneasy, even with so much else occupying her mind. "I feel like we're going to have to deal with him at some point," she said to Clark, her eyes remaining laser-focused on the screen. "He's not going to go away quietly, and if we take our eyes off him while we're dealing with more pressing concerns, he'll press every chaos button he can get his fat fingers on, and we'll have concerns I don't even want to think about. He's the kind of leader who starts a war to strengthen his hand, and he's going to be looking everywhere for ways to weaken the ICA. Even if that meant causing problems between Earth and New Kerguelen, he would do it. Based on some of the things Godfrey has done behind the scenes lately, I've started to think that he actually cares about cooperation, beyond how he can use it to secure his own position as chairman. But Cole doesn't care about anything. I get the whole idea of keeping our enemies close, but I really don't know why Godfrey helped him back into Downing Street. We can't exactly ban him from the ICA while he's prime minister of one of our core members." Clark exhaled slowly and shrugged.
"Honestly, I checked out of all this political stuff a while ago,
I know you have to pay attention to it, and I don't envy that for a second, but there's no room in my head for idiots like Cole anymore. I do agree that he seems like a whatever-it-takes, power-at-any-cost guy, for what it's worth. And you're right about Godfrey. He has definitely changed in the past year or so. I spent a lot of time with him around that whole shooting drama, and when I looked into his eyes, I saw someone who's in this for more than power. I'm sure that's why he got into politics and everything, but I mean now. I think he's a legacy kind of guy, all about how he's remembered. I guess that's still selfish in a way if you break it down, but at least it means he's going to try to do things that make people look at him fondly, you know? Cole just wants to do things to make people look at him, and as long as they're looking up to him in a high position, he doesn't care if it's a look of hate.
That's actually pretty incisive, Emma said, turning to Clark.
No need to sound quite so surprised there, he chuckled in reply, repeating his comment from a few minutes earlier when Emma had displayed a similar and well-meaning recognition of his perceptiveness. As the coverage of John Cole's speech ended, the screen cut to some footage from earlier in the day which showed Dan and Tara arriving at the ICA building. They both looked cheery enough, putting on their best public faces and smiling as they stepped inside. Emma dearly hoped they were still smiling now, whatever the reason for their lack of contact, and that she too would be able to smile soon when they finally got in touch to relay that Leisha hadn't shown up after all, and that Piper was simply remembering a previous incident which was understandably etched in her young mind.
Dada,
Piper said. That's right, Clark replied. He looked down to smile at Piper, but was surprised to see that she wasn't looking at the projector screen. Instead, she had turned her head to face the kitchen.
Dada here,
the baby went on.
Dada, tata, Lise, here.
Emma's heart skipped a beat. No, they're not here, darling. It's just us, Clark said gently. He then smiled and faced Emma, unsure why she looked so concerned. See? She's just remembering stuff. Now we know she didn't actually sense anything about Leisha being with them, because it sounds like she's saying they're here now, and we obviously know they're not. Cutting off Clark's words and cutting through the already fading hope in Emma's heart, a sudden and total flash filled the living room. They both knew what it meant. After the flash, three figures stood near the edge of the family's kitchen.
Dada, tata, Lise, he,
Piper exclaimed, innocently excited to be seeing the individuals whose presence she had undeniably foretold. Hey, baby, Dan said, hurrying over to see her.
We've got some news,
Tara called from behind him. Teary-eyed and slouched as Dan approached to greet Piper, Emma closed her eyes and gulped.
So do we.